You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. Coming up, the group All Aboard Wisconsin is pushing for more passenger trains throughout the state, starting with the Chicago to Madison line.
That's not why we're playing that music. Mm-hmm. On this day in 1975, shark attacks hit theaters across the country with the opening of the movie Jaws. In addition to cleaning up at the box office and picking up a few Academy Awards along the way, Jaws added a new concept to the movie world, the summer blockbuster.
Mike Mayo is with us now to talk about the impact of Jaws and the biggest summer blockbusters of the last 40 years. He is a longtime movie critic. His recent books include The Horror Show Movie Guide and the novel Jimmy the Stick. Mike, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. This is one of my favorite subjects.
Well, good, because we've got a full half hour to talk about it. I want you to talk about those dark days before the summer blockbuster. What was it like, and how did the world change movie-wise after Jaws?
Well, first, there was no internet then, so we kind of sat around by candlelight watching television, and nobody had VCRs then either, so it was just like, you know, this was a world that I know today's young people simply cannot imagine. We didn't carry phones around in our pockets either. What Jaws did was just to show that you could make a movie that was not meant to do anything but entertain, and to entertain very well, and have that really be the thing that everybody went to. Now, what we tend to forget when we talk about Jaws particularly is that it was an adaptation of a very popular novel. Peter Benchley's novel had really just been a huge bestseller. Almost everybody read it, and the studio was taking a pretty big chance when they gave it to Steven Spielberg. He didn't have that good a track record then. He was a young director. They ran into all kinds of problems because they actually made the film on the ocean instead of doing it in a tank or in a studio with a tank. And then they had the famous problems where Bruce, the mechanical shark, didn't work. And even now, when you go back and look at it, some of the scenes with the mechanical shark are pretty funny. I mean, it's pretty clear that, you know, this is not a real shark. But that doesn't matter, because by the time we saw all of that in the movie, everybody was so scared. We were out there on the water in that boat with those three guys, and anything that happened beneath the surface of the water, we couldn't see, and it was terrifying us. That's what made the movie so suspenseful and why people liked it so much. And I can recall myself going back to see it two or three times that summer. That's just the kind of movie it was. People stood in line to watch it. It was part of the experience, I think.
Well, part of what it changed was marketing, I think. Let's give a listen to part of the Jaws trailer.
There is a creature alive today who has survived millions of years of evolution without change, without passion, and without logic. It lives to kill. A mindless eating machine. It will attack and devour anything. It is as if God created the devil and gave him jaws.
So, Mike, I understand there's a big marketing push leading up to the movie's release on this day back in 1975. Did they change the way movie marketing happened?
I think that's it. I mean, this was kind of an all of your eggs in one basket thing. They were really betting a lot on this movie. They knew they had people interested in it, and so that they really wanted to get people into the theaters, and boy, did they ever. And we cannot go one more second without mentioning John Williams' music, because without that music, that hokey advertising there just would not work at all. But when you've got that score going on underneath it, then you can get away with baloney like that.
We're going to hear a lot of John Williams behind some of the clips we pulled for this show, by the way. Is that the sign of a blockbuster, John Williams did the score?
It has come to that, hasn't it? That's another one of my things. Another one of my favorite summer movies is another one that he and Spielberg did together. We'll talk about that a little later. But it's just he really has the right touch. He knows what he's doing with this kind of score.
So do you think that the movie industry was surprised by the success of Jaws, or was this part of a larger plan? And then how did they react after that? You know, you got this monster hit, no pun intended, and then all of a sudden you got next summer to look forward to.
Yeah, and I think that's when we really started seeing the studios aiming for a few movies like that. And it kind of culminated, it seems like it was really last summer, that it looked like there was a big blockbuster, a big special effects movie every weekend opening up. And when you have that many, I think the audience just can't accept it. Say the teenager who would go to see one, maybe two, big science fiction horror movies is not going to go to four of them. And that's simply the way it is. The audience just isn't there. And as we were saying earlier with Jaws, there wasn't all that much competition. We didn't have very much cable television, anything like that. For visual entertainment, you went to movies, and that was the movie you went to see.
And this was movie as event, and so if you're saying if it's diluted by having an event every week, it's not an event anymore.
Exactly. And part of it, I really do think it's not just the movie. It is the whole idea that everybody's going to see it. This is something that everybody does. And the whole entertainment landscape is so much more diverse now. I don't think one thing can actually, attract that much attention. The only recent thing I can think of that came close to that was James Cameron's Avatar, which wasn't a summer movie. That was released in the winter, of course. But again, he made this big event movie there, but it takes something that special to do it. Can you feel the same kind of excitement for any of the Transformers movies or, say, Captain America movies, anything that's coming out this summer? No, it's just not there.
Well, here's a clip from a movie that stands as my big event movie of my childhood.
Mos Eisley's spaceport. You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Star Wars, of course, and there's Sir Alec Guinness. And listening to that, he was probably the best-known name in that movie, along with maybe Peter Cushing. There wasn't that kind of star power that was going to single-handedly draw people in. So a blockbuster, at least at that point, didn't need the superstar actor to make it.
No, and by the way, you played my favorite line from
mine too. Mine too.
But yeah, and Star Wars, I remember with it, there had been an awful lot of talk about it. There had been a lot written about it while it was in production. We'd seen a lot of stills and things, and to get acquainted with the whole idea that we had a big space opera, but that it was going to be treated seriously. This isn't just a kids movie kind of entertainment stuff. It is fun, but it is also meant to be taken seriously, and that's what I think the presence of Alec Guinness gave them.
Yeah, he gave that a certain gravitas, but boy, it still had that action that if you were in the mood to just go enjoy a movie and be swept up in it, you could easily do that. And I did do that back in the theater, I remember.
Yeah, me too.
And this introduced, Jaws 2, I guess, part of one of the themes here in the blockbuster, the big special effects movie.
Yep. And the big special effects sequel, which is never as good.
Another thing that happened with both of these movies, and I'm thinking of it now, is they both became part of the culture. Like with the Jaws movie, everybody was scared to go in the water. If you lived in, Lake Superior, you were afraid to go into the water. And then all the sort of the lampooning of it. I remember the land shark on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they just became such a big part of the culture. And it happened very, very quickly. And as you said earlier, everybody was so unified. Everybody was aware of it, no matter where you went.
Yeah, and it in any part of the country, it really was kind of a nationwide, and I would assume in Europe too. That I don't really know what the release pattern of that was, if it was out in other countries at the same time. They didn't do that as much then as they do now, but it certainly was. This was something that everybody saw, and like I said before, most people saw more than once. It was something. It was just kind of the thing you did on the weekend. If you could go see Jaws again, you did.
That reminds me, one of my favorite calls on the Ideas Network ever was from a guy who remembered seeing Star Wars at age, 11, in the Soviet Union.
Oh, wow.
With one Russian guy translating, doing the dubbing, and still being blown away by this piece of forbidden, illegal American culture. So, yeah, you're right, Mike. It had a worldwide sweep there.
So we move on to another movie, another big blockbuster, and let's play a clip from that right now. And I have to say, and I'm not going to do anything else except this is one of my favorite clips. So let's listen to Harrison Ford.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
Asps. very dangerous. You go first.
So why did it have to be snakes? But again, I mean, a great movie, lots to look at, lots of action, and another summer blockbuster. So this trend by this time is pretty well entrenched in the movie industry.
Right, and I remember with Raiders, when that came out, I was living in a small town in Virginia, and was friends with doing summer viewing, and I was friends with a theater owner, and she invited me over to a midnight screening of Raiders. This was a couple of weeks before it opened nationwide, and I only vaguely understood what this was. I knew it was from Spielberg. I knew it was science fiction or adventure or something, but that was about all. I had some vague idea that it actually took place in outer space. And then to see this and just be so completely knocked out by this wonderful movie with the pace that just, you know, started fast and never let up the whole way through. Oh, that is one of my favorite movie-going experiences of my entire life.
We're talking to movie journalist Mike Mayo about the rise of the summer blockbuster as we celebrate the anniversary of the opening of Jaws in 1975.
Well, well, Jack Sparrow, isn't it?
Captain Jack Sparrow, if you please.
Well, I don't see your ship. Captain?
I'm in the market, as it were.
You are without doubt the worst pirate I've ever heard of.
But you have heard of me.
A clip from Pirates of the Caribbean as we talk about the summer movie blockbuster with film critic Mike Mayo. Today is the anniversary of the one that started it all in 1975, Jaws.
And you can join in the conversation. Do you get excited about the big summer movies? What is your favorite summer blockbuster, past or present? Are they still making good blockbusting movies? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us. That address is talk@WPR.org.
And Mike, a clip from a more recent movie there. Do they still make them like they used to?
I don't think so. I think they have gotten too formulaic and too dependent on big computer-generated special effects. And for that, I think we can blame one of my own favorites, another Steven Spielberg movie, Jurassic Park. I think that really got us on the road to, you know, that was the first of the big special effects movie that showed dinosaurs with what has come to be called photorealism. You couldn't see any wires. There was no obvious stop motion, no back screen projection, any of the things that we normally see. Those dinosaurs looked as real as the people that were on the screen. And since now they can show anything with that degree of realism, we have the excesses of the Transformers and other things like that.
So, well, in terms of the stories, technology is certainly a part of it. But, you know, we were thinking during the break, you know, Jaws, Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, those are some pretty new franchises at the time. And it seems like they have turned into franchises since then. Is part of this, too, just the ability to have a good story that's got some original thought to it? And what does that say about the state of the movie industry in terms of original thinking?
Well, when was the last really good original movie you saw that wasn't a sequel? I mean, I think you've hit it right there. And those three movies you mentioned are all good, solid stories, very well constructed with good characters that we come to identify with and believe in, no matter how fantastic the settings are. And the whole dramatic structure of them, the three-act structure that they've got is just, absolutely rock solid. All of those go back to really good, talented writers who got things started. And the director kind of, you know, knew what they were doing and followed that, you know, to really tell that good story, not just the splashy effect that made you go, wow, but that gives the whole movie that impact.
We'll go to our phones now at 800-642-1234 as we talk about summer movie blockbusters we love, or love to hate for that matter. We've got Christian on the line in Sun Prairie. Christian, hi.
How's it going?
Good. What's your summer blockbuster?
Indiana Jones, all the series, but those are my favorite growing up. But I had a question for you guys. I don't know, have you guys seen the last one, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
I did not.
Last one.
Yes, I saw it, and it was, as other people have noted, the moment when Indiana Jones escapes the nuclear explosion in the refrigerator, that's jumping the shark.
Yep. Well, I was curious for you guys. I wanted to know if you think he's going to make another movie based on the way it ended with him putting his hat back on.
What do you think, Mike?
I would be surprised. How much longer can Harrison Ford play that character? I mean, he's just, I think, getting too old.
Yeah. Was there talk of a new, young Indiana Jones incarnation?
Something right.
Like
remember,
that?
Shia LaBeouf was there as his son. And so, you know, I guess he could have. But I feel like the bloom is off that rose now. And they've really kind of done all of that they can do. I would say, if anyone was asking my advice, you know, take those ideas and create a new character who's like Indiana Jones but is involved in different things, but bring that same spirit to it. Don't try to just, you know, drag a few more dollars out of the franchise.
Yeah, and what I was wondering about that, because you're seeing some old things come back. You know, there's that new Ninja Turtles film, for example, that is out, a summer blockbuster, if ever there was one. But, you know, some of these films, you think about Jaws, is almost old enough to be, I dare say, redone.
Rebooted?
Oh, no. Right, rebooted. I mean, that's what we've been seeing so often here with Spider-Man, even with Jack Ryan, the Tom Clancy character. That's, you know, been done so often. I really don't see the point in it. I think we've gone, those movies have gotten so much more complicated. I really can't see how, even with great special effects, you could do Jaws any better than it's already been done. And we've seen so many killer sharks now. They really are kind of old hat.
Well, we saw a reboot earlier this year, way bigger than any shark. Let's give a listen.
In 1954, we awakened something.
Well, there's nuclear tests in the Pacific. Not tests.
They were trying to kill it.
It being Godzilla. Mike, did that one need a reboot?
I must admit, I enjoyed that on sort of a guilty pleasure level. And as I have always enjoyed the Godzilla movies on a guilty pleasure level, and I really kind of like the idea that some people criticize this, that this was a heftier, chunkier Godzilla than the early ones. And I think you need that body mass. If you're going to flatten San Francisco, you need to have, you know, the big tail and the big hips and all of that. So, yes, I thought this Godzilla did exactly what we needed a Godzilla movie to do. I'll bet we're going to see a whole lot more of them now, but and I can't say that that's a good thing.
You know, I don't want to get too awfully deep and philosophical here, but when you think of summer blockbusters, does the climate of the time sort of influence the blockbuster, or is it the other way around, where the blockbuster kind of influences the culture?
Ooh, now that is a very interesting question, because when we started talking about this, I was thinking about another of my favorite summer blockbusters from back in 96, Independence Day.
Oh, yeah.
And I just remember the excitement that was built around that. We'd been seeing the ads for it for months. And to me, that was a movie that delivered, but at the time we weren't involved in any wars. We could take mass destruction a bit more frivolously, I suppose. And so when we see that kind of mass destruction done now, we don't take it quite the same way. Even Godzilla, as we were just talking about, though it was kind of fun, it simply didn't work for me in the same way that Independence Day did.
Go back to our callers now. We've got Dan on the line in Menominee. Hi, Dan.
Well, hi there. So speaking about reboots, especially the Godzilla reboot, I was very much against these for a very long time, especially the Spider-Man one, which seemed like it just wasn't
Why?
Enough time.
Agreed.
Well, but then I realized that I have seen at least six different iterations of A Midsummer Night's Dream in theater. And each one was just a retelling of the story, and so I'm starting to look at these movies as sort of our modern-day folk tales. And so when you talk about reboots, it might just kind of be a new author's take on it. And so we can sort of, I don't want to say pick and choose, but I guess what I'm advocating. And so now instead of, you know, being all spiky and angry and nerd ragey about reboots, I'm kind of looking forward to them.
Dan, thank you. What an interesting perspective. What do you think of that, Mike?
I think there's a lot of validity to that. I mean, think about how many cinematic versions we have seen of the Three Musketeers, going all the way back to Silent Days. I think every generation kind of rediscovers that story. They're interesting characters. It's a good, solid plot. but open to adaptation in a lot of different ways. My favorite version of that is the one that comes from the 70s, directed by Richard Lester. But the newer ones have been very popular with younger audiences, and I would not be surprised if before long we don't see another one, because it's been a long time since we've had something like that. And yes, it is a folktale for you know, in popular entertainment terms.
So as we approach the top of the hour, I got a couple of questions here. One, what is a summer blockbuster that didn't really bust any blocks but is underappreciated in your book?
Oh, wow. Hmm.
And if that doesn't work, what's your favorite one of all time?
Favorite one of all time would have to be Jurassic Park, simply because I saw that at a really great down to the Uptown Theater in Washington, D.C., which is one of the great big screen theaters with a full house full of kids that were all just as terribly frightened by the whole thing in all the right ways. And so that just the movie-going experience of that really has stuck with me over the years. As to one that is unfairly judged, nothing comes to mind right off the top of my head. I can't think of any that I really liked that I thought, boy, this should have done better with the public than it did.
All right. We'll leave it there for now, Mike. Thank you for joining us. Always a lot of fun.
Thanks for inviting me, guys. Like I said, this is one of my favorite topics.
That was movie critic Mike Mayo. His recent books include The Horror Show Movie Guide and the novel Jimmy the Stick.